Good morning, early birds. You've caught The Worm, a podcast from Yellowstone Public Radio, rounding up reporting from our newsroom and Montana Public Radio. Today we have stories about Montana's Missing Indigenous Persons Task Force, Northwestern Energy, and the first in a five-part series on the American Prairie Reserve. It's Monday, December 23rd. I'm your host, Jess Sheldahl. Montana motorists might soon have fewer sponsored license plates to choose from to put on their vehicles. The state legislature in 2019 approved new rules to discontinue less popular specialized plates. Right now, Montana offers 266 specialized plates. Proceeds from the sale of specialized plates go to charity. Starting in 2020, Montana will discontinue specialized plates chosen by fewer than 400 drivers. One reason for reducing plate designs is to make plates easier for law enforcement officers to read. Another change to the law requires 75% of revenue from the plates to be spent in Montana. A U.S. judge says environmentalists and Native Americans can proceed with lawsuits challenging President Donald Trump's approval of the Keystone XL oil pipeline from Canada. In a Friday ruling, U.S. District Judge Brian Morris expressed skepticism over government arguments that Trump has unilateral authority to approve the $8 billion pipeline. But Morris denied a request for a court injunction to prohibit preliminary work on the pipeline, since no such work is planned until spring 2020. Morris had blocked the project last year, prompting Trump to issue a new permit in March in an attempt to circumvent the courts. Montana's Missing Indigenous Persons Task Force is extending the deadline for tribal colleges to apply for a grant to start a missing persons database. That's after no one applied the first time around. Olivia Reingold reports.
One of the state task force's key mandates is to award the Looping In Native Communities Grant, a $25,000 matching fund meant to help create a missing persons database. No tribal colleges applied by the deadline last Friday.
I wasn't shocked.
Ellie Bundy McLeod, a former tribal college employee and newly elected Confederated Salish and Kootenai Tribal Council member, sits on the state task force. She says the initial month and a half application window was too short for tribal colleges to gather all the information they needed, like their plan for meeting data verification and security standards.
And then I think there are concerns about, is $25,000 enough to do what's required?
The bill that created the grant and task force, State Senate Bill 213, says the database must be administered by a data specialist who meets certain qualifications. Tina Chamberlain, the LINC grant coordinator with the Montana Department of Justice, says the size of the grant isn't what stopped colleges from applying.
The funding is not an issue. It's simply a matter of the timing and having the appropriate people submit an application.
Chamberlain says leading up to the first deadline, she spoke with all seven of Montana's tribal college presidents at a meeting for AHEC, the American Indian Higher Education Consortium. She also says she reached out to each college president to make sure they got a copy of the application afterwards. The task force decided to extend the application deadline to January 25th in a Thursday conference call. No tribal college presidents could be reached. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Olivia Reingold.
Olivia Reingold is Yellowstone Public Radio's Report for America core member. A state board late Friday announced it will allow Montana's largest utility to increase rates by $6.5 million. The Montana Public Service Commission's final order on Northwestern Energy's rate case allows the company to recover about $600 million annually from the company's 370,000 Montana electric customers beginning March 1, 2020. Northwestern had requested almost $35 million in 2018. This past March, the PSC gave initial approval to a $10.5 million rate increase, which means the company will collect about $3.7 million above the final rate increase amount. The difference will be refunded to customers with interest over a year-long period. The PSC also directed Northwestern to continue its $3.2 million hazard tree removal program to reduce wildfire risks, approved the company's E-plus green tariff settlement, and approved a new pilot program designed to decouple Northwestern's recovery of fixed costs from its energy sales. The PSC had previously endorsed many of the items on the 100-page final order, including denying Northwestern's request to create a new net metering customer class for home rooftop solar users. The PSC cited flawed methodology and Northwestern's failure to provide requested information. While the document notes Northwestern is requesting approval to buy an added 25% share of Colstrip Power Plant Unit 4, the PSC declined to tie in Colstrip-specific issues to the rate case. That includes asks like requiring regular status updates on Colstrip and transition funds. This is Northwestern's first rate case as a vertically integrated utility, though the PSC has ruled on a number of rate adjustments individually. At a moment when some corners of the West are calling for the government to get out of the business of managing public lands, an ex-Silicon Valley entrepreneur is trying out a new model in north central Montana, using private philanthropy to build the next big public park. This week, we're running a five-part series on the American Prairie Reserve, how it's financed, how it'll work, and how it'll impact daily life for people living nearby and farther afield. With support from the Pulitzer Center, Nate Hedgie of the Mountain West News Bureau brings us this first installment of The Next Yellowstone.
This is going to be a new kind of national park, one that's privately funded and about the size of Connecticut.
It's going to take a lot of money.
That's Reserve founder Sean Garrity, and he says the federal government doesn't have the political will to build something like this.
We realized private philanthropy, unfortunately, is a way to go.
For the past 18 years, Garrity and his team have flown all over the world trying to squeeze money from some of the wealthiest people on Earth.
What's your condensed sales pitch if I was a, let's say I'm a multimillionaire?
Are you? It goes better when you really are.
Yeah, really? Well, you know public radio. I make a lot of money.
Well, if we were just walking around out here where there's no other people and I run into somebody and they're a multimillionaire and they say, where am I and what is this thing? I'd say, well, you happen upon one of the most amazing conservation projects going on anywhere in the world.
A proposed 3.2 million acre wildlife preserve in Montana's northern Great Plains. We're standing in the heart of it right now. It looks like a miniature Grand Canyon.
What you're seeing here is incredible beauty with the Missouri River out in front of us here and those beautiful cliffs and the raking light coming across in the afternoon here.
It's a beautiful sight. But what's missing are most of the animals that used to live in the Great Plains before they were killed off by white settlers and the U.S. government. Garrity plans to help bring those animals back. The wolves, the grizzly bears, and thousands of genetically pure wild bison.
Over here would be some elk. Over here would be bison. Little on the riverbanks would be a mama grizzly bear with two or three little cubs walking along in the mud there.
Right now, the reserve either owns or has grazing leases on about 400,000 acres of land. But they need a lot more. So Garrity tells potential donors that his project is a solid investment, a massive wildlife preserve that's free to the public and that isn't created by an act of Congress. Instead, it's built
through philanthropic dollars without tapping government money or raising taxes to do it and make it open to yourself and your friends and your family to come and enjoy it.
This sales pitch has worked over and over. Some of the most prominent donors to American Prairie include a German billionaire, a handful of New York City-based investment bankers, and heirs to the Mars Candy Company. But critics, like political science professor Rob Reich, say that big money comes with baggage.
The structure of global capitalism, which they had a role in upholding, is partly responsible for the degradation of the environment.
Reich is the director of the Center on Philanthropy and Civil Society at Stanford University. And he points to a couple of the reserve's major donors. As top executives in the finance industry, they help steer major investments in oil, gas, and coal. So Reich says it's kind of hypocritical for these people to give money to help the environment while making money by hurting it.
The idea of taking that pile of wealth and setting oneself up as a philanthropist and engaging in a whole bunch of do-gooding projects and getting the social standing of being a donor and reaping the social rewards of philanthropy is at some odds with the initial act of the money-making.
For his part, American Prairie founder Sean Garrity says the Reserve can't afford to be too picky about where it gets its cash. Plus, he points out, everyone plays a part in climate change.
The person that is on the board of directors of an oil company is no more evil than the person who ravenously consumes the product.
Garrity points a finger at me. I drove more than 2,000 miles in a 99 Toyota Tacoma to talk to him and see the Reserve for myself. The way he sees it,
the person who puts the gas in their car or uses the coal in their house to heat, or the person who gets on a non-essential jet trip to take a vacation or go to a wedding or something like that, is the person actually creating the business and encouraging the oil companies to keep on doing what they're doing.
Garrity says that would mean cutting almost everyone out, and American Prairie would lose all of its donors, including regular folks who only give $25 or $50 a year. He says that would doom the project and the chances of saving one of the world's last remaining grasslands. For the Mountain West News Bureau, I'm Nate Hedgie.
While the Reserve has a small army of rich people to pay for it, it also has a small army of dedicated scientists who are on the ground doing the daily dirty work of building the next Yellowstone. That story next time on this series from the Mountain West News Bureau, a consortium of NPR member stations in the region. And that's what's happening in Montana today. Check in with Montana Public Radio's Montana Evening News for updates on the news of the day. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Jess Sheldahl. We'll have another episode of The Worm for you early birds tomorrow morning.
The Worm is produced by Jess Sheldahl for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Meadowlark Call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. Partial funding for The Worm is provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montana. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.